Fastball bounce to the right side, and Pascal into right field, a base hit. Frazier rounds third. He's in to score. Throw goes to third, not nearly in time. Witt goes first to third. A first pitch RBI single for Salvador Perez. And it's 7-4 Royals in the top of the ninth inning.
A little afternoon baseball yesterday. The Royals handled their business here on 96.5 The Fan. And then it was a late night last night for a lot of people, keeping an eye on what was going on with the Miami Marlins. Yes, we were Marlins fans yesterday. It's interesting.
Sickening to have to keep watching them play baseball.
It is. That's a 100-loss Marlins team that helped the Royals in a big way. And today it can happen. Today it can happen. The Royals can clinch a playoff spot for the first time since 2015. That can happen later on this evening, man. What's going on?
It's a Friday.
It's a red Friday. It's a blue Friday. Cody, I know you don't like these kind of days, but it's a blue Friday and a red Friday at once, okay?
I didn't say I didn't like those. Last week, 2 weeks ago, you gave me a hard time about how red Friday's this no matter what, and then you were in blue, and I was confused.
Because it was supporting the Royals.
Okay, so red Friday is every day, including the day before the game, before the final weekday.
We don't got to do this again.
Unless the Royals are good, and then it's a blue Friday?
Well, you can do whatever you want. Nobody's going to like punish you for doing what you're doing. I'm saying, you're asking, why would I be wearing blue today? I don't know, man, because the team might have a chance to clinch a playoff spot for the first time since 2015.
I got no complaints about your attire. Obviously, supporting our guy Vinny Pasquantino, who was hitting off a tee yesterday.
He was.
And a batting cage. Pitching machine. So giving himself a chance to maybe try to get back come in the playoffs. But last night, again, another sweat. And this all feels like a rehearsal for the stress that playoff baseball is getting ready to cause me. The last two nights are a rehearsal setting the stage for the eventual stress of actual playoff baseball. Because them getting up 4-1, then it's 4-4, then a battle between the bullpens before Adam Frazier. And Adam Frazier coming through, a guy that I wasn't planning on coming through for the Royals this year, if I'm being honest, comes through at the perfect moment for the Royals. And weirdly enough, he didn't even look like he knew he hit the ball. He looked like, where did that ball go? I'm not sure where I hit it, only to realize it's heading out to left for the victory. Like in the game before where I was just getting mad. It was like the first game of the series. I'm just getting mad that it's 1-0 the whole time. That series was perfect. No game was without its stress, but they get the sweep at the most pivotal moment of the entire season and put themselves one game away from the playoffs. Either a Twins loss tonight, don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Royals win tonight, don't care. Either way, they're in the postseason if they get that.
The magic number is one, and it is kind of interesting. You know, you think about other moments in Kansas City history with sports and clinching scenarios, and it just so happens to involve another Miami team. I could not help myself but think about a couple years ago, I guess it's been, probably over 5 years now, but when we were watching, or maybe you were at Arrowhead at the time when the Chiefs were playing the Chargers, I think it was in that final regular season game to get the number one seed, or at the time there were two home field advantage seeds, two teams get the bye, and you were keeping an eye on what Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Miami Dolphins were doing to help out the Chiefs.
And Kevin Harlan's calling both games.
Yeah, he's doing both. And so then last night, we're all keeping an eye on what the Miami Marlins are doing to assist in what the Royals might be able to do now. So it's kind of interesting. I thought they were kind of similar situations, and it sets it up to where the task is pretty simple. You laid it out there, Cody. They can clinch today with the win and do it themselves. Or if the Twins want to give them a loss, that would help. That would help as well. The Orioles are going to take on the Twins, by the way. That game is this evening. And Royals are scheduled to play this evening. We know the hurricane and obviously really scary situation down in that part of the country right now. Looks like there's major flooding. As of now, the Royals are in Atlanta. And so far, so good in terms of
Brady Singer versus Max Fried.
Yeah, we'll see if it happens tonight, but it is scheduled to happen so far.
You can hear it right here, obviously, on your home for Royals baseball, including playoff games, 96.5 The Fan. But yeah, so the Twins, I'll admit, that Marlins game, for a team that I haven't watched all year, I don't know that. I don't know who's on the Marlins. I watched the Marlins all year. No idea who any of their players are. I'm starting to think this guy Norby's a double agent. He's got 5 strikeouts. He's 0-6. I find out he's from a Minnesota suburb. I'm like, is this dude trying to toss the game for the Twins? What the hell's going on here? Looks like he's actively working against his squad. to have a 4-run lead, blow it for the second straight day. I was getting actively mad at the Marlins. Actively mad at them.
They're a 100-loss team for a reason. They're not a good baseball
but you know
team.
What? All is forgiven because at, I don't know, 11 o'clock last night, they found some way to scratch across some runs late. They stranded the bases loaded twice for the Twins. And that's the whole thing. We were talking about the Royals in the middle of that 7-game losing streak. And this is twice now this month. I know it's been hard for them because at times this month they've had an inconsistent bullpen and at times this year. But they've had great starting pitching almost the entire month of September. And so with that still going and the second Vinny went down, they felt deflated. But this is now twice in this month. And I know this has not been a good month of baseball. But this is twice this month that they were staring down the barrel of an epic collapse of which the Twins are actively doing. They were staring down the barrel of it. And twice, they pulled themselves up. They found themselves out of the damn darkness. And they got 3 straight wins against the Nationals team. They could have been fighting much more this weekend. 2 out of 3 I had taken against the Nationals. And they could have needed 2 still and some, more work this weekend. And instead, they took a sweep. I mean, how can I not say this team doesn't have incredible fight? That's incredible fight.
It is. Their projections, again, Fangraphs back up to 96, 97% chance to make the postseason. It was 94, and then it got down to 65 or something during the losing streak. They're back there. Now, everybody would agree, just take care of business today and be done with it. Otherwise, you do go into Saturday with 2 games left, Cody, and you're like, okay, it's getting a little more interesting now, and you still would need a win or another Twins loss. The reason why tonight feels like the night to accomplish it is you have an Orioles team that I believe is a win away or a Royals loss away from having their seeding basically locked in. They can't win the division, and they'll be essentially locked into that 5 spot if they win or the Royals lose or the Tigers lose, I think is the other scenario. So you may not have an Orioles team that puts much out there Saturday and Sunday against the Twins. That's another reason why it feels like tonight for both the Royals to handle their own business, but also for the Twins to lose against the Orioles, that tonight would be a perfect night for that. And it sets up some interesting scenarios with how the Royals could approach the rest of the weekend. We, of course, will not be back on until Monday. So by then, the regular season's over, and we'll be talking, hopefully, about who the Royals are playing in the postseason and everything. But how do you lay out the pitching staff? Because tonight, we know, as you said, Brady Singer, Max Fried, really good pitcher for the Braves. They're going to play it by ear. The Braves will the rest of the weekend based on how the rest of the NL in the wild card race is going on when they, if they will, pitch Chris Sale this weekend. If not, they'll wait till the doubleheader they have on Monday. But if you're the Royals, if you clinch, let's say tonight, best case scenario, you clinch tonight. Reagans and Lugo are scheduled for Saturday and Sunday.
You don't have to use them anymore.
Alec
Marsh.
How much do you think, I think fan versus organization here is interesting. How much does playing the Orioles in Baltimore versus playing the Astros in Houston matter? I told you I would rather play the Orioles.
Much rather.
Are the Royals willing, though, to say, we don't want to jeopardize Cole Reagans not being the starter in game 1 or game 2 of a postseason series? Is it that much of a gap between the Astros and Orioles that you're willing to essentially roll out Cole Reagans on Saturday or I guess it'd be Sunday? I don't think they'll do that. I think Saturday, if the Royals lock it up tonight, one way or the other, I think they'll probably just have Alec Marsh handle some of those pitching duties. Maybe Michael Lorenzen can give him some innings this weekend
Maybe
Daniel Lynch. And that's probably the best path, as much as I would prefer playing the Orioles. I think that is the realistic scenario they go with if they clinch tonight.
I think so, too. But also, the problem with tonight is, and this is why it'll be fascinating to see how they do, they put everything into winning those Nationals games because they knew that the more wins they could stack up now, the better chance they had of making the postseason. But I'll just tell you who's not available tonight. Chris Bubich is not available tonight. Lucas Erceg is not available tonight. Daniel Lynch is probably not available tonight. So the problem, maybe he is. Schreiber might not be available. For the first time all season, they had Erceg pitch 3 days in a row. For the first time all season, they had Chris Bubich pitch 3 times in a row. Those guys are not available to lock this one down for you. So either Singer's gotta have it all, right? Bring his absolute A game, shove for 7 innings, and then 2 guys you would not typically rely on at the back end of the bullpen, have a nice day. Or they're going to have to go for broke on Saturday, is the truth. I'll be honest.
Well, hopefully the Twins lose. Then, then you're not even sweating that, but yes.
But I think tonight, because of the way that they set it up, they went for broke in all the games that were close that they could get the wins. And they got the win in all 3, so the gamble paid off. But tonight, a huge chunk of the good part of your bullpen is not available. So unless Brady Singer shoves and absolutely has it, you're actually better off putting your chips in for tomorrow when you can have Bubic back out there, have Urseg back out there. Yeah, fine, you risk Lugo starting, but do the math. Okay, Lugo starts on Saturday. Well, then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, by Wednesday on 4 days rest, I can throw Lugo back out there. He's in game two of the wild card series. If we win game one,
then you can be.
Well, yeah, then we can just say, well, screw it. He'll pitch game five. We
or,
can
or games. Yeah,
or game three. Sorry. On the fifth day. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. So, like, you have a little wiggle room on the game tonight. Look, I would rather the Twins just go to Baltimore tonight, get their teeth kicked in, wrap this bad boy up and call it. There actually is a weird scenario you and I were discussing out there, which is, let's say the flooding gets out of control, the rain gets out of control, and the Royals don't play the Braves tonight. I think they will. I was looking at the weather. I know there's flooding in the area. Baseball doesn't typically operate under, like, you going to your job in Atlanta with the flooding versus the Royals who are staying.
No, but
right
they have
hotel.
To have staff that can get to the stadium.
Sure,
right?
Sure, and safely get to the stadium. Most importantly, how do you celebrate clinching a playoff spot if you're in your hotel not playing a baseball game? Let's just say the Royals game got bagged tonight, and the Twins lose.
So you clinch.
Do we get videos of them just like at the hotel bar popping champagne?
I mean, sure, why not?
Do they tarp off the lobby like? I'm just asking, what's the hypothetical scenario in which you clinch a spot, but you're not at the stadium?
Yeah, we were discussing that. It's an interesting scenario. I mean, it's a good problem to have if, in fact, unfortunately, if you can't play the game, that you still find a way to clinch tonight. I don't know. My guess would be, Cody, maybe they have like a ballroom at the hotel, the convention area. They could just try to, hey, can we use this to basically go in there and celebrate? Or I don't know, does everybody just go to Vinny Pasquantino's room basically and there's just a big party? I don't know, man.
I kind of think maybe you get the suite. Like, if that's not the normal case, is the biggest hotel room available? Because we'd like that. We'll lay down some tarp, we'll pay the extra cleaning bill, and then, you know, someone's got to get a cell phone out and send the Royals video team, send our guy Jason Hanna or Sam, send him up to the room and get us a little celebratory video. I still think
as of now,
it's just a funny hypothetical, at least a little bit of like what would happen if you clinched, because most of the time there aren't a bunch of off days. So people aren't clinching when like people are off. It doesn't happen very often. I guess they'd probably be watching the game if they were off. I don't know. It was exciting. I'm excited about the possibility of doing it.
You're right, though, about the way Q managed it. I think, you know, we had a top a couple days ago, how people's view on how he's been handling this and how much, you know, does a manager play a role in all this. But before the game, Matt Quatrero, according to Annie Rodgers, was asked, about the bullpen usage. And he said at that time he was more open this time of the year to use relievers and the idea of that 3 days in a row. Especially with how well the bullpen had been pitching. And so we saw that play out. And so I thought that, you know, that was a nice shift in adjustment. And that was the balance that we discussed actually with JJ on Tuesday, which was, hey, it is one game, but also we know there's only five games left or four games left or whatever. And so you do have to adjust. And I thought that was good to see for those that are worried that, you know, maybe they're just going by the book and how they've been doing all year. No, they're willing to pivot.
When it's 162 games, not when there's three.
They're willing to pivot, which I think should give you some confidence when the playoffs start and this team is officially in it, that they will pivot. Just because they did something a certain way in the regular season from a managing bullpen and usage, they're willing to pivot. You have to be willing. And I think that'll hopefully give some people some more confidence about how Q and the organization will approach circumstances, whether it's letting a guy go an extra inning, whether it's going back to someone in a must-get-an-out type of spot. That made me feel a little bit better.
But he did some of the things he did all year that I didn't have a problem with, which was he played the numbers game to empty his bench. The reason why Frazier was hitting is because he still had him available to go lefty-righty at the end of the game to try to give himself an advantage on that matchup. Same reason MJ came in late. By the way, the final inning in which the Royals got those three that eventually led them to the runs, that was two pinch hitters and a pinch runner.
It was left like three or four lefties in a row. They intentionally set that up going up against Finnegan.
Yeah, they unloaded the bench of lefties against a righty, knowing, because the way baseball works now is that guy's got to face three hitters one way or the other, loaded it up, pinch runner to go with it. Like, he saved his bench just to unload it. And yeah, and went back through and used Zerpa and used Urseg again and used Bubic again. And honestly, from just a confidence standpoint, and I know we're going to talk more about some of this as we go on, but when, like, from a confidence standpoint, as you look at can I trust Urseg to pitch 3 days in a row? It's never been something he's been asked to do. Bubich is coming back. Just as a quick reminder, rehab year. That's what they called it. Now they're treating it a little bit different now. Because, again, you have to alter your rules based on the positioning you're currently put in. And the position you're currently put in is that, you know, times are up against it. And if you can clinch a playoff spot, things become worth it. I loved the way Q handled this entire series. Almost perfectly, if I'm being honest.
913-586-7965. That's the Jay Southland Toast Service text line. We'll take your text. We'll get some calls a little bit later on the show as well, as I'm sure you can kind of feel a little more excitement in the air in Kansas City. I know people are still nervous waiting for it to become official, but today could be the day where the Kansas City Royals get themselves back in the postseason for the first time since 2015. It feels good just to be able to say that part of it as well after where this club has been for many years and certainly coming off a 56-win season a year ago. Coming up in 45 minutes at 11 o'clock, we'll check in with our Chiefs contributor right here on 96.5 The Fan. That's the editor over at ChiefsOnSI.com, Josh Briscoe. Want to get his perspective on what we could expect out of Kareem Hunt. And, of course, this Chargers team that is banged up. Justin Herbert was limited in practice again yesterday, which probably tells us a little bit more about his availability come Sunday afternoon. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But let's look across the AFC right now. Thursday Night Football last night, pair of NFC teams, but now we're officially in week four of the season already. We know before the year, we all kind of went through the text line, all three of us. All right, these are kind of what we think are the three, four, five best teams in the NFC or three, four, five best teams in the AFC. Has it changed for you guys at all? Because I think we can avoid wasting our time too much. I think that we all believe the Chiefs and Bills are in the top three of the best teams in the AFC. I don't know how you couldn't think that.
Be hard. I mean, even with the Bills' slightly soft schedule, I think it'd be kind of hard to make that argument.
So who's the third best team, I think, in the AFC right now? That, to me, is where the debate is. I don't know how right now you can't say Chiefs and Bills are in the top three. So who's the third team for you guys? I actually think it's the Baltimore Ravens still, and I'll tell you why. It's because, one, I think they're going to beat the Bills this weekend. So Baltimore got off the hook. They get a win in Dallas. Settle down. Same way we kind of talk about on baseball. Like, take a deep breath now if you're Baltimore. You get to 1-2. You don't like how you started. They're actually not that banged up of a football team overall, the Baltimore Ravens, compared to some other teams in the AFC.
Relatively healthy.
And if you think, and I do, they're going to beat the Bills, well, the Bills, we think, are one of the top three teams. The Ravens could get to even at 500 and would have starting to have some more momentum and things like that going for them. So I think the Ravens are, considering their quarterback play, their head coach, all that factors in for me. And they've played a very difficult schedule to this point. The Raiders is the one where it's like, what the hell were you doing?
Yeah.
But they played Kansas City. They played Dallas.
But I got questions about the Cowboys, man. They might be fraudulent, too.
But the Cowboys are a 500 team. I mean, there's some teams that have only been beaten up on one win and winless type of team. So, yeah, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens is for me the top three.
I think the third team has to be the Texans. They're winning more. Their schedule is not difficult either, but they're doing a better job taking advantage of it. I know you could be like, well, they barely beat the Colts, and now the Colts have looked way worse, really, essentially, since that game. That was maybe the game they looked the best, was it once again, they barely beat the Bears, a team that doesn't look like it's heading anywhere, and they just got their teeth kicked in by Minnesota. So I get that it'd be an easy time to jump off the Texans bandwagon and say that. The only hesitation I have is what you're talking about, which is coaching. I do believe in the Ravens coaching more than I believe in the Texans to this point, because they have not earned the right in order to buy into that. But I still think it's probably the Texans because the quarterback play at its current level. Lamar Jackson is a two-time MVP, mm-hmm. and I'm not here to say he's a bad quarterback. That is definitely not the case. But that is an offense that still doesn't look like it's hitting. And I don't know why they let the Cowboys back in that game. And like the Cowboys, again, I watched them last night, and I am just not impressed by anything they put on the field regularly. So, yeah, I probably could have made an argument for the Ravens. I was curious because, I know a couple of years ago you were a bit of a Jets guy, and I thought maybe, last year you were more of a believer that they were able to do it.
That ended quickly, snaps in.
Maybe Drew, actually wants to talk Steelers and give them some of their...
Oh, no.
but the Steelers might... Here's the argument for the Steelers Here's the argument for the Steelers real quick. They are 3-0, so that's point one, right?
There is an argument.
They are undefeated.
They are.
They have the NFL's best defense.
Yes.
And the NFL's best defense will typically win a fair amount of football games. Now, I'll say they've only scored 51 points in three games.
But you know why you can't put them there. You know why you can't put them there? Because ultimately we know that in the NFL in 2024, if your quarterback is someone like Justin Fields, nobody can take you seriously enough to be one of the three best teams, in my opinion, in the AFC.
I think it. You can. I'm with you. Go with the Ravens. I think the Steelers. You can make a case, I guess, because of the defense alone. But we need to see more of a sample size of just three games. If they're 7-0, and they're still putting up this sort of production defensively, but they're only allowing like 8 points a game or whatever it is, then I think sure. I think you might be able to make an argument for the Jets. Maybe. I don't think I would now, but they have the Vikings coming up, and then they've also got the Bills coming up here. Two out of the next 3 weeks. Maybe the Jets enter that conversation.
Yeah, they play well in those.
But I think you can only make the case between the four that we've mentioned, the Chiefs, Bills, and then that third spot goes to either the Ravens or the Texans.
Chargers beat the Chiefs this weekend. Do you enter them into the conversation? 2-1 team would be 3-1, same as the Chiefs.
Kansas City, if you beat Kansas City, you would have to start viewing them a little bit differently. Would I think they're suddenly one of the top two teams in the AFC? No, but they would go from, I have them outside of like the top six. To me, they would vault into like number
top
six.
Like, okay.
That's what it would do for me. I don't know where you guys have the Chargers right now if you were to rank out all the AFC teams.
I don't know, six, seven. I mean, somewhere.
Yeah. So, like, to me, they wouldn't, like, the Chargers wouldn't vault to the third best team in the AFC if they beat Kansas City, in my opinion. I just have a ton more questions.
Are the Steelers
still.
They're in so your top up. Six?
Yeah. They're six.
Again, I don't think you can just say, like, a 3-0 team doesn't deserve to be in the top half of the AFC.
Like, I think the Jets are actually better than the Steelers. Like, if you're telling me who would I rather face later, like, in week four, like, this week, who would I rather face? I still think I would rather face the Steelers if my quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, and if it's the Chiefs that we're actually talking about facing them, because at some point we just know, like, you have to have a quarterback that can go and make a play for you. The Steelers, their style of play has worked to this point. The quarterbacks that they have played, they've played Kirk Cousins, who's in week one especially was coming off the Achilles
injury.
Yeah, he
really wasn't ready.
They've played Justin Herbert, who for part of the game, and he was hurt. And then who am I missing?
Falcons.
No, I already had Kirk Cousins. Who's the other team I'm missing?
Who did they play last week?
Oh, my goodness.
Denver? Have they played?
Yes. Denver. Bo Nix. Yeah. So they haven't
played. Yes, week
so,
two.
Like, they haven't played the quarterbacks.
13-6 that game was.
But in fairness to the Steelers and these other teams in the AFC is, the AFC right now looks pretty weak. Mm-hmm. Colts, Titans, and Jags all look like they stink. Browns look like they stink. Ravens and Bengals are off to a terrible start. Broncos and Raiders stink. Dolphins and Patriots stink.
Yeah.
Like, I can eliminate half the AFC kind of right now just based on the way they play. As a quick side note, it was hilarious how mad Al Michaels was at all the penalties last night.
Oh, he was grumpy last night.
He was getting hot. Just actively being pissed off about it. It was funny.
Now, some of them were holding calls and all that, but there were multiple flags on the field at times, but he was irritated by it. For the first half, we saw the official, Clay Martin, I think, or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him more than Malik Nabers. And then in the second half, Malik Nabers just took over that football game and was incredible, even though the Giants lost. But,
Danny Dimes, man.
Yeah, it was an interesting time. Did you see, Alex, who was back for the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday? Did you happen to check an old waiver wire?
I did not.
See what the Chiefs were doing on the practice squad end of things to improve their roster?
Well, I know they signed Keontae Ingram back. Is that what you're talking about?
Not Keontae Ingram, a person who was much discussed on this show. Multiple times, and we'd love to take your thoughts. 913-586-7965. How big of an impact do you think that one Jody Fortson will have?
Jody Fortson is back with the Chiefs. Jody Fortson, who, of course, now it sounds like you probably forget, he's 28 years old at this point. He is a veteran tight end. He was with the Dolphins during preseason, and he got cut right before week one. He's a familiar face. He's a fan favorite. Right, he's a fan favorite for many, many years. People tried to talk him up as if he was going to be, I would say, the guy that would have 7 or 8 touchdowns in the red zone and be a red zone threat. And unfortunately, his body failed him. But a fan favorite, why not? An extra body in the locker room as well. All that makes sense. It's fine. I think we all know by now, though, like, reasoned expectations. 913-586.
Can we have reasoned expectations? We'll take your calls. 913-586-7966.
Yeah, we normally don't do calls, but I guess we have, looks like Nick in Colorado is on the show. Yeah, Nick in Colorado. You're on Cody and Gold.
Hey, good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, first off, I just want to say I love that y'all guys got an FM dial now. because now I can hear and I can listen to the show all the way out in Colorado. That thing, that sucker is powerful. And I was just hearing you talk about a guy who I think we are all very happy to see back in the Chiefs uniform. I mean, you know, so much has been happening in the world lately, you know, politically. Alex, I know you know what I'm talking about, right? We don't have to go there. But I think we all could use a little pick-me-up. Number 88 from Valdosta State. He brings the juice, folks. You know who I'm talking about. Jody Burton! Woo! Go, Jody. Go, Jody. It's your birthday. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Let's go!
Nick in Colorado. It might sound familiar.
Big Jody Fortson guy.
Might sound familiar to some of you. He's back. He's back in Kansas City.
He demanded to come on this show the second that Jody Fortson has re-signed with the team.
He
saw
that news, and our good friend Nick in Colorado said, I gotta call in. And he called in this morning.
They got all the tight ends in the world, huh? Are they planning on, like, running seven tight end sets? What the hell are they doing?
It is a little bizarre, right? I mean, Peyton Hendershot, been signed, released, signed. We know that Jared Wiley, they drafted. Noah Gray got a contract extension. Travis Kelce is fine. It's just I think it's an extra body. Good vibes as well, but just in case.
He's been a part of other Super Bowl teams, so you can't argue with when Jody Fortson's back, this team starts playing better. Playoffs are around here.
Text line says, I'm glad Daddy called it.
I'll never forget. I honestly think by the time that all shook out, he was like more uncomfortable with it than we ended up being by the time it was done because I made a weird song about it. Maybe we can bring him back for Father's Day.
Yeah,
you know?
The Jody Fortson was a listener and fan favorite there. So I'm glad we were able to bring him back. Him being Nick, by the way, I'm talking about. We didn't actually personally get Jody Fortson back to Kansas City, but we did.
I like to think in a way we helped.
Maybe
you know?
So, but people wanted to hear, I think, from Nick as well there. So that fit. Someone says, I'm out in Auburn, west of Topeka. No power lines. I can barely hear. How does that guy all the way in Colorado hear? I think he might have. Well, the Odyssey app, first of all.
Yeah.
I'm sure Nick listens every single day still to the show. Every single day.
Someone said Nick from the top turnbuckle. Yeah,
John Cena. That's right. That's
well
right.
done, Nick. Well
Jody
done.
Fortson back in Kansas City. Up next, when we get back here on Cody and Gold, one thing the Chiefs have an opportunity to do this weekend, other than just win, but in a way that they can actually improve themselves the rest of the season. We'll explain that what that is, I should say, next on 96.5 The Fan.
Fastball laced through the left side, a base hit into left field. Block goes in to score. Massey rounds third. Wood bobbles the ball in left. Massey scores standing without a throw. A pinch hit, two-run go-ahead single. Adam Frazier comes through, and the Royals take a 6-4 lead in the top of the ninth inning.
The biggest hit of Adam Frazier's time in Kansas City, no question about it. Jake Eisenberg on the call there right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. That, of course, broke the 4-4 tie and ultimately set up the win yesterday for the Royals to put them in position now with the Twins loss last night. Now the Royals just a win or a Twins loss away anytime over the next 3 days to getting back to the postseason.
I'm a little bit surprised, I'll admit, though, on social media, on the text line and this stuff, I feel like I've seen more highlights of 2014 and 15 playoff runs to hype us up for this one than memories of this year's team. And what I'll say is, like, in 14 or 15, I would say they were just showing me highlights throughout the year. Look when Kane Holio exists, or look at this home run by Alex Gordon in game 54. Like, Bobby Wood Jr.'s got grand slams this year, man. We got memories to live through this year of things this year's team has done in clutch moments. Cole Reagan's striking out eight straight bat. Was that him that struck out eight straight? I think it was him that struck out straight. Eight straight batters. Like, I kind of feel like we're not living as much in, look at what this year's team is doing so that we get to experience playoff baseball again. And instead, we're just using 10-year-old highlights. And I feel like I should be like, I want to remember Adam Frazier coming through in game 158 for the Royals. I want to remember Bobby Wood Jr. hitting a grand slam a year ago, right, to help them win as they were getting ready to maybe start showing stuff about. Like I
think there's
a couple
reasons. I feel
like those memories need to start cycling, and that's.
I mean, it's. I think you're right. But also I get why it's different. One, it also speaks to the season-long discussion that we've had about attendance and
I think people have always doubted this
team. And hesitation and just like waiting for the shoe to drop, the skepticism for a team that, as we just said, has a chance to clinch for the first time since 15. It has been a very long time since this team was truly in a spot to go to the playoffs. And so with that, it takes some more buildup. I think some of these moments, or of course playoff moments ultimately of this year, that is what it will take. You know, it will take this team being in the postseason, which they're very close to getting there, and having moments in the postseason, and hopefully they have a bunch of them in this year's postseason, for that to be what it is. Right now, it's people saying, you know what, man, I remember how great it was in 14 and 15. I lived in this city then. I know what October was like. I know what it was like living and dying by every pitch where everybody around town, I was, you know, you're filling up your gas and people are wearing Royals gear. Like, you knew what that was like. You remember.
Yeah.
And so you're going back to that because that is all you have still to latch on to.
This is only the fourth time in 30 years they've made the postseason. So we don't have a lot of old memories to cycle through. I get it.
And so you're right. There have been great moments this year, but people are going to latch on to their fondest memories that they had, which was the World Series runs of 14 and 15. So it probably, fair or not, is going to take this team being in the postseason, and does Bobby Wood Jr. have that unbelievable defensive play to save the Royals in the eighth inning for them to take game one of a wild card series? Does it take, Cole Rankin's going out there and having seven shutout innings, like whatever, you know, stuff like that.
Even just the clinching moment where we're watching people.
Sure. And that'll happen.
Spray
hopefully
people
tonight.
With champagne. Yeah.
That'll be there. And hopefully it's tonight.
Because some of those memories are your Dono Ventura saying, we're going to the world, you know, like whatever. It's Danny Duffy. It's those guys celebrating, clinching playoff spots. And I understand, but like there were regular season memories that I still hold dear during those times. And I want to remember this regular season that way, but I think what you're pointing out is probably right. Where I spent a lot of time this year worrying that it wouldn't last, I think probably my favorite memory is Bobby Witt Jr. hitting a grand slam in Chicago. But like, I think that there are plenty of options available to you for like iconic moments, or if it's Isbell's catch, or like we'll see highlight reels of a playoff team. But you're right. In order for it to stick the way 14 and 15, do they have to make a long playoff?
And
run?
In 14 and 15, let's just call it like it is. The Chiefs weren't doing what they've been doing, and so it's a little tougher to poke through for some fans. And I get it. You know, right now the Chiefs are going for a three-peat, and so you have a lot of people that are keyed in on that. Even though these are regular season football games, and we're talking about playoff baseball, perhaps. So I think there's a clear separation, but that is why it's more challenging to break through for the Royals from a fan buy-in / just interest level. I don't even want to get into the whole topic about Bally Sports App and things like that. There are a ton of reasons why, but ultimately, if you want to make it simple, you get into the postseason and you have those memories there. Don't worry. People will give you full attention. Heck, you can go on right now and still buy ALDS tickets, and there's plenty of them available. You know what I mean? So that tells you it's a little bit different. Now, the minute the Royals clinch, and I think the excitement level takes a whole other, goes up a whole other notch at that point, then I'm guessing you'll start seeing those games actually sold out before even the postseason begins for tentative divisional series games and all that.
Next year too, right? If like the regular season leads to another playoff run, you'll start thinking about those regular season.
Well, the season ticket, the season ticket holder base has to build back up. I mean, it's not an impressive number. And so there's a ton of tickets available for potential playoff games that you have to sell. So we'll talk Royals throughout the show today. Obviously, we'll take your text and calls, 913-586-7965. But thinking of the Chiefs, one thing that we've hit on throughout this week, and Dane and Hughes kind of had mentioned it as well, we were discussing this offense. Yes, turnovers, but also the deep passing game. That's been a huge topic, I think, nationally this week around Patrick Mahomes. Is the average depth of target only still the 140-plus yard through the air pass, 44-yard touchdown to Rashee Rice a couple weeks ago? This is another team they're going to face Sunday, much like the Falcons, plays a ton of zone. The Falcons were like top three in NFL in zone coverage.
Number one.
And who's number one?
The Chargers. Number one. The Chargers play zone more than any team in the rest of the NFL, which means one of two things. Now, it probably means another big day for Rashee Rice, or another big day for Travis, or not another, but the first big day of the season for Travis Kelce, because those are their zone eaters. These should be good matchups for this team. But one different stat stood out to me, because zone Dudley for the underneath, the give him the pass, let him run, all the things that we're seeing out of the Chiefs offense these first 3 weeks. Patrick Mahomes is also facing the lowest pressure rate in his entire NFL career right now. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to push the ball downfield. He has time, Gold. I think the initial thought is, does he have time? He has time. 19.4% of his dropbacks is the lowest pressure rate of his career. That, of course, over to Chris Clark over at Arrowhead. So, like, I appreciate the stat. But it's like, if you know that now, you're three games into it, you've gotten a sense of it, I think you can take the time to let the zone get beat this week to see if you can get the ball down the field. The Chargers are an okay pass rush team. Joey Bosa didn't even practice yesterday. So their best pass rusher is not even on the field. They're down to Khalil Mack, who's been pretty good this year, but he hasn't been the world beater that Trey Hendrickson. You've already made the switch at left tackle. I think that you need to take some intentional deep shots this week. And somehow, because of the zone, I know they'll be tempted, Gold, for what you just said. The team who ran the third most zone in the Falcons, they picked apart. It was a great matchup for them. They could just go back to the well and do the same thing. Now, if I were the Chargers, I'd be thinking that too, and it'd be like, time to change. But you never know with Harbaugh. He's an old school coach. Do you actually think they'll take a deep shot this week?
Well, of course, they'll take one shot, sure.
They took one to save your worthy last week.
There's going to be an opportunity in this game to do that. You know, do I think suddenly we're going to have a game where they have three passes completed of 40-plus yards? No, I mean, I just don't think that's where they're at right now. I also think defense is still, with the way they're playing them, I don't believe that's in the cards necessarily. Also, this kind of game, I don't know, we'll have our predictions later on in the 1 o'clock hour during the fan club. We got a couple special guests stopping by the way. We'll get to that a little later. I don't think this is a high-scoring affair. I also don't think it's game script where we discuss how Andy handles a game that you think is going to be in the 30s versus game that you think could be in the low 20s. And this is a game, for me, that I believe is in that 21-17 type of range. You know, like Chiefs win 21-17 is kind of the number that's been in my mind the last couple days. I don't think this is a Chiefs put up 35-point type of game. And so that isn't likely the script. I think if there's opportunities down the field, of course they're going to take them. But man, if it's anything like the Falcons, they're going to play all this zone. Rashee Rice underneath, Travis Kelce, maybe for the first time all the year, depending on how the Chargers play him, underneath. There's just a lot of yards after catch capability when you're going up against a team like this. I think we'll see the wide receiver screens again a lot.
You think we're just right back to the well? I mean, if they run a bunch of zone, Andy's not afraid to take what he gets. And I think with Mahomes in particular, I think it seems fairly obvious now that he had to completely change the style of quarterback that he was for an entire year. And it's taken him a little while to get his feet back under him. Do I worry about Patrick Mahomes' ability to adjust? No. Because when he had to start throwing the short passing game, do you remember how long it took him to adjust to that? Goldie, he was throwing the ball down the field all the time. It wasn't working. It took him like half a season. Like, it takes most quarterbacks to be like, oh, damn, I am not going to be able to do what I want to do. This stinks. I'm going to have to like dink and dunk this thing all year. You want me to play like this? And so now he's back in the flip side of that, where between Worthy, Rice, and I think what will, and protection, it appears based on three games of evidence, I think it'll take him a few more games before he's like, oh, I got time. I got time to figure out how to get this ball down deep. The team's going to know you've got time, because I don't think I spent my entire training camp watching Patrick Mahomes throw 17 deep balls a day to Xavier Worthy to not think that they're eventually going to try to open that up. Maybe it's not this week. Maybe it's not against the Chargers because of the way they run zone. But it's coming eventually, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, they're not, even last year, which was frustrating, there were opportunities to Kadarius Toney and MVS deep down the field. We all remember that Eagles game, was that Monday Night Football, where MVS was open, dropped it. So even with those guys, they were able to scheme up situations to get them open down the field. So yeah, it's going to happen eventually. But I just, you know, every single week right now, that's not probably in play. I mean, we saw the one I keep mentioning, the one to Rashee Rice over 40 in the air. Doesn't mean you can't have a 40-plus yard completion, yards after catch, but in the air, yeah, they're probably only getting one or two opportunities to do that in the game right now. And so you got to connect on one of those two, and if you don't, then you're going to go through a game where it's not there.
Yeah, and that's what, yes, exactly. But I also think that they're going to have to keep testing that, or teams will force them back into what the offense looked like last year.
The other part,
you gotta prove it.
The other part is the turnovers. You know, I mean, that was another story last year. The beautiful thing, we can talk about all these things while the team is 3-0. I'm going to keep that in perspective as we go through these. That's the great thing. But they're a flawed team still at 3-0, and turnovers last year was an issue. Now, it didn't prevent them from winning a Super Bowl, but yet again, we do sit, and they are towards the bottom of the league in turnovers. Only the Tennessee Titans, the Eagles, the Raiders, the Jags, and the Giants are worse turnover differential than the Chiefs. Now, you're also basically two takeaways in no turnover game away from suddenly being in the top half. I mean, so that it were early enough in the year where you can swing it like that. They've actually forced some turnovers. It's just they have not protected the ball again.
No, loosey-goosey once again. And this just is love giving the ball away.
It's on Mahomes early going, right? He submitted that, some of the mistakes. But that's an area to watch. We had Danan Hughes on the show yesterday. He joins us every Thursday. Listen to what he had to say about the turnover issues happening again for Kansas City.
Not only was it abnormal to make the playoffs, but also win the Super Bowl when you're minus 11 in the giveaway takeaway. And that minus 11, I don't put a lot of that weight on the shoulders of the defense. I think the defense did a great job of putting us in position, obviously, to win games and then ultimately win a Super Bowl. But we're minus 2 now after 3 weeks. So we're kind of falling down that same trap. You just kind of wonder if you can make the magic happen the same exact way. Normally you don't see that happen. But, Patrick Mahomes, he's going to be the biggest critic of his own play and the inadequacies or inefficiencies of the offense.
The good news is if you said, hey, there's a problem with your team and the guy that has a chance to fix it in his name is
Patrick Mahomes,
I don't get as nervous as if, oh, by the way, I need Gardner Minshew to fix the Will Levis. I need him to fix the turnover problem. Yeah, we're screwed.
Well, if you said that sentence, just
by the way,
pack up.
That's why
season.
The Titans are minus 7 in turnover differential. We've all seen Will Levis play football this year.
He's had 3 absolutely comedy photos taken of him because of his inability to hold on to the football. Mahomes has been loose with it. He doesn't fumble, so it's just as simple as, can you stop throwing picks? And last year, the answer was no. He threw plenty. The year before, he threw some, not a ton, but he threw some, a normal amount. And I would say that normally, I'll take the good with the bad, right? I don't care. Mahomes doesn't have to be Aaron Rodgers. He's not. They play a different style of football. He doesn't have to be Aaron Rodgers, and every season is 27 touchdowns and 2 picks, like what it was in Aaron Rodgers' career. But one guy's got 3 Super Bowl rings, and one guy's got 1. And one guy is the second longest divisional streak in NFL history, and the other guy doesn't. Like, Mahomes can do it his own way. He doesn't have to carve the path of, I'm the most protecting quarterback of the football of all time. But it can't be this rate, because I can't go through another season where, because Dana's right, you cannot win back-to-back Super Bowls, I do not think, being this careless with the football. Because, and look, to their credit, postseason kicked in and they weren't careless with the football anymore. Patrick Mahomes threw 6 touchdowns and 1 pick, lost 0 fumbles in the postseason last year. They weren't careless with it. The second postseason started, that's why they were able to get the football.
There. Yeah.
Had they been as careless with it in the postseason as they were in the regular season, no Super Bowl, no title, no ring. Some other team would beat you. The other teams got more careless with the football.
We mentioned the Steelers when all three of us were going through kind of the top teams, maybe in the AFC, and do you consider the Steelers? Well, look at turnover differential. This is the margin that they have. The Steelers could not have the same turnover differential the Chiefs have at minus 2 and still be undefeated.
No,
they just can't.
Be 1-2.
Instead, the Steelers are plus 4. It's a big reason why they've been able to stay undefeated. The Packers are the best team in turnover differential so far this season. They're what, 2-1? They're plus 7. The Bills are undefeated. They're plus 5. I mean, so what the Chiefs, to Dana's point, what the Chiefs did last year at minus 11, you're not supposed to be able to do that and still go win a Super Bowl. You want to play with fire again? You want to risk that again? And so that's why it's important for them to get that portion corrected. I think defensively, they're going to force more turnovers this year. They're on a nice little pace right now, if you look.
Yeah.
But if you can just rein it in a little bit, if you're Patrick Mahomes from an interception perspective, I think you'll be all right. You're right, though. You're going to deal with that. He's not going to only have 5 picks all year. That's not who he is. And the benefit obviously far outweighs the negative. But they got to be better offensively. I think this entire week has been all about that.
from Andy Reid, from Patrick Mahomes, from everybody. So it's not like it's this problem that they aren't recognizing. It's not like this problem that I don't think is correctable, because as you said, they didn't correct it till the playoffs last year. You'd like them to correct that a lot earlier, but ultimately they did correct it, didn't they?
Yes.
It just took a while.
Well, I don't know if they corrected it or if they just like stopped doing it in the playoffs. Wow. Because they spent 17 games not correcting it, and then playoff, because that's the whole thing with the Chiefs. Is like every time I get frustrated by something, it seems like their biggest issues over the last five seasons, when they get to the postseason, those go away. Sometimes seemingly magically, you know? The game speeds up, everyone feels a little tighter, except Kansas City. They're just like, eh, another playoff game, huh? Oops, another AFC title game, okay. Like, they don't seem to care.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll check in with our Chiefs contributor here at 96.5 The Fan, the editor over at ChiefsOnSI.com, Joshua Briscoe. But what are your guys' expectations for Kareem Hunt? 913-586-7965. We know he's going to be active. They're going to have three backs active. Carson Steele had, 16, 17 carries? Nice outing. You're going to have Samaje Perine still active, and Kareem Hunt making his return to the Chiefs. So I don't suddenly think Kareem Hunt is just getting all the carries. Certainly not the first game.
No. I think Carson Steele will start the game, get the first few drives.
It's the hot hand approach that we talked about last week. Last week, guess who had the hot hand? Carson Steele. He's going to have the first crack at it, as he should. And if he's effective, he will lead the team in touches in the backfield. I think there's a good chance that'll be the case anyway. I still want to know, Samaje Perine, do we see any carries really from him anymore? Those go to Hunt, and then if there's receptions out of the backfield, that's where Perine and Hunt could split. But I think you're going to see Perine maybe have like one carry. Otherwise, I would like it to be Carson Steele and Kareem Hunt carrying the football.
I think I actually have decent expectations for Kareem Hunt. Not unrealistic. I don't think he's Kareem Hunt from 2017 all of a sudden. But I can't think of a player in recent memory for the Chiefs more motivated to perform well for this team than Kareem Hunt. Did you hear the way he was talking in that press conference on Wednesday? It's been his dream for years to be able to throw the Chiefs uniform back on, go win a Super Bowl with the team that drafted him, and prove that he still got it. So I think he's going to get 5 to 6 carries a game. I think 1 to 2 of those will be in the red zone, and I expect him to be effective in those carries, maybe only solely based on motivation alone. I know his yards per carry were down last year, but if you actually go, it's the same thing as I told you.
Career low, yeah.
Yeah, but all of those are not created equal. I told you the same thing before the season about Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry also had a bunch of career lows, but his offensive line was also making him get hit faster than ever. A lot of what was happening with Kareem Hunt last year, analytically, was everyone else's fault, not his. It was how quickly he was getting hit. Now, he's not as fast as he used to be. I don't think he's 2017. But I think he'll be effective. I think he'll be 4, 4.5 yards a carry. I think he'll be a good red zone threat because he seems to have a nose for the end zone. I kind of expect him to maybe be near a touchdown this week and, you know, get 5 or 6 carries, be effective.
I don't doubt his excitement and all that, and like want to, you know, prove people that he, you know, all this kind of, that still only goes so far. Like, you still have to physically be able to go and do it. And that is still the question that we don't know. He obviously,
last year he couldn't.
Of course he feels he can do that. I would hope so. Of course he's excited. I have no doubt that he's motivated. Can he still do it? And that's fine. That's his motivation. People like me saying, question, can he? I don't know. I'm not saying he can't, but I don't know if he can.
Sure.
That's what I want to find out on Sunday. It's also his first game. So whatever he does against LA, I don't think is like the limit to what he can do.
It's not the floor or the ceiling.
Yeah, but it's another angle and storyline in this game. I mean, later on, I'm sure we'll talk about Wanya again. I mean, this is still only the second game where Wanya's back. I mean, it's not like we're just, all right, no problem now.
Left tackle's fine now.
Can he follow that up? No, I think Bosa still is not practicing, or has he practiced recently?
He did not practice yesterday.
Yeah, so he's probably not playing on Sunday, I would suspect by now. So you get a little bit of a break there. But there's a lot of interesting, like, storylines besides the obvious of the quarterback injury and, you know, can they get the deep passing going and things like that. And Kelsey, it's like, you know, Kareem Hunt further down the depth chart, but it is kind of, it can change how you approach the next 7 weeks while Pacheco is still out, because Clyde was in the locker room yesterday. Yeah. The video was circulating. Obviously good for him. Seems like he was in a great mood then. Obviously wish him the best. But is he available in week 5? We know he's eligible. Will he be back in week 5? So based on what they see from Kareem Hunt and Carson Steele on Sunday could dictate what it means for P. Ryan's future,
Carry 4 backs?
I don't think you can't carry 4 active running backs.
I don't think so either.
Kareem Hunt, by the way, anytime touchdown on FanDuel is plus 430.
That feels too low.
It's worse odds than Mahomes has to score a touchdown.
He was What, you know, that was on FanDuel. One of the sites had it. Oh, that's better value. One of the sites had Kareem Hunt to get a touchdown at plus 220, which didn't seem like enough value
incredible,
at all.
Though. 430 is better value, but still.
We don't see many players. We don't see many players above 5-1 that are, you
anymore.
Know, unless you're, you know, Justin, you know, even Justin Watson's probably not much better than 7-1 for this game to get a touchdown.
He's 7.5-1.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
so is Juju Smith-Schuster.
I mean, think about that. We're going way down the depth chart just to get the 7-1 number.
Yeah. That's probably why. But Kareem Hunt's been a really good red zone back his entire career. So I wouldn't be surprised if they used him again there, especially for a team that struggles in the red zone.
All right. Let's go out to Josh Briscoe coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, the editor over at Chiefs on SI.com. He's our Chiefs contributor. We'll ask him that same question about Kareem Hunt, what he expects from him, and what does he make of the rest of this AFC as well? That's coming up next on 96.5 The Fan.